picture this. You're staring at your printer. You just spent 12 grueling hours printing this beautiful, highly complex mechanical bracket in PLA.
Oh man, we have all been there.
Right. I mean, it looks absolutely flawless sitting there on the build plate. So you let it cool, you pull it off, you take it out to the garage to install it on your workbench, you put it under like a minor physical load, and snap. It instantly breaks clean right along the layer lines.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you own an FDM printer, you know exactly how that feels. That sudden sinking realization is the exact moment every intermediate 3D printing hobbyist realizes their strategy for printing decorative desk toys is just not going to work for real functional parts.
No, it really won't. It's a harsh physical boundary you hit. You transition from printing things that just, you know, have to look good sitting on a shelf to parts that actually have to do work. They have to bear loads, resist impacts, survive the heat of a car interior, and suddenly the rules of the game change. You're no longer just fighting stringing or overhangs. You are fighting the physical reality of stress, strain, and, well, material science.
Welcome to the deep dive. Our goal today is to build a structured decision framework for choosing engineering filaments. We're looking specifically at ABS, ASA, nylon, and polycarbonate, or PC.
The heavy hitters.
Exactly. And we want to diagnose why functional parts fail in the real world so you can stop wasting your time and your plastic. We're pulling from two fantastic sources today. The first is a Monday Hub article from Printara 3B, which builds out this very practical decision tree for these materials.
A really solid framework, yeah.
And the second is a Thursday support article that compiles actual real-world reader Q&A failure stories.
Which is incredibly useful because, I mean, we need to move away from the habit of just loading whatever spool happens to be on a desk and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
We need to work backward from the actual environment the part will live in.
Okay, let's unpack this. Going through that Thursday Q&A source, the single most common failure question by a landslide is simply, why did my PLA part crack?
Yeah, always the first question.
Now, on paper, PLA actually has a really high tensile strength. Like, it feels incredibly solid when you try to bend a thick piece with your hands. So why is it failing so catastrophically in these functional applications?
So to understand that, we have to look at the difference between stiffness and toughness.
Yeah.
PLA is incredibly stiff. That is why it feels so rigid.
Okay.
But it's also highly brittle. It lacks elasticity, meaning it can't absorb energy by deforming slightly before it breaks. It just takes the force until it violently snaps.
Got it.
But the bigger issue, and honestly the reason it fails in garages and cars, is its thermal profile.
Are we talking about the melting point here?
Not the melting point, no. The glass transition temperature. That is the critical metric for functional parts.
Right.
The glass transition temperature is the point where the amorphous polymer chains in the plastic start to loosen up and slide past each other.
So it doesn't melt into a puddle, but turns like soft and rubbery.
Exactly. And for PLA, that happens at around 55 to 60 degrees Celsius.
Which is roughly 130 to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you print a PLA bracket and leave it in a hot car during the summer, or even just in a warm room under tension.
Yeah, it's going to slowly deform, stretch, and eventually fail without ever technically melting.
Wow.
It's known as creep. The material slowly flows under stress over time. So for permanently load-bearing mechanical parts, PLA is simply not engineered for the job.
It just can't handle it.
No. It fails under sustained force, it cracks under kinetic vibration, and it warps under very mild ambient heat.
So when TLA hits that wall, what are the immediate steps up? I mean, if you need something stronger, where do you look first?
The immediate step up for most people is PETish. It handles toughness and mild heat much better than PLA.
Because it has a bit more flex, right?
Right, so it absorbs impacts rather than shattering. But if you need serious stiffness combined with dimensional stability, you start looking at carbon fiber composites. The sources highlight PACF, which is nylon infused with milled carbon fibers.
Okay, let me stop you there because the carbon fiber sounds incredible, but doesn't that fundamentally change what you're doing to your machine?
Oh, absolutely.
If those fibers are so stiff, aren't they basically tearing up the inside of the printer?
That is a vital warning. You cannot just load a composite filament into a stock printer. The carbon or glass fibers suspended in the plastic act like microscopic razors.
Yikes.
Yeah. If you push that through a standard brass nozzle, it acts like liquid sandpaper. It will literally carve out the inside of the nozzle, widen the extrusion hole, and completely ruin your flow rate within a single print.
So what's the fix?
You absolutely must upgrade to a hardened steel or ruby nozzle before you touch abrasive composite variants.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for a second. Let's say I don't want to upgrade my nozzle. If my PLA part breaks under a load, could I not just, you know, go back into my slicer, change the infill to 100% and make it a solid block of plastic? Wouldn't a solid block of PLA be strong enough?
Well, I mean, it sounds logical, but it fundamentally misunderstands how an FDM printed part carries a load.
How so?
The issue is that the 3D printed structure is highly anisotropic.
Meaning it has different strengths and different directions.
Precisely. Unlike an injection molded part, which is a single uniform mass of plastic, an FDM part is built line by line, layer by layer.
Right.
When you extrude a new layer of plastic on top of an older layer, the polymer chains do not fully entangle across that Z-axis boundary. The plastic is mostly just sticking together through thermal adhesion.
So it's essentially glued together by its own heat rather than being chemically woven together like a solid piece of material.
That is a great way to visualize it.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the part is significantly weaker along the Z-axis, right where those layers meet.
Mm.
If a force acts perpendicular to the layer lines, it acts like a wedge and just splits the layers apart. That is why geometry and print orientation matter far more than your infill percentage.
So bumping up to 100% infill just gives you a heavier part that will still shear right along the same weak layer lines.
Exactly. Because the load needs to be carried by the continuous strands of extruded plastic, not the weak thermal bonds between them.
Right. And when we look at the internal structure itself, using 3 or 4 perimeter walls carries the load far better than just maxing out the internal grid infill, yeah.
Definitely. The continuous perimeters act like a structural shell. We have to converge on the core idea here. Material choice, layer orientation, and wall thickness must be dictated by the actual physical load and the direction of the force.
You can't just blindly bump up the slicer settings and expect physics to look the other way.
No, physics always wins.
That structural reality makes perfect sense. So let's look at the actual decision tree framework from the Monday Hubby article. The first major branch for intermediate makers moving past PLA and PTJ is choosing between ABS and ASA.
Right.
Now, looking at the print profiles, they seem incredibly similar.
They are nearly identical in terms of hardware requirements. Hmm. For both ABS and ASA, you're looking at needing a nozzle temperature around 240 to 260 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
You need a heated bed at 90 to 110 degrees Celsius to get good first layer adhesion. And crucially, you absolutely need an enclosed chamber to suppress warping.
So if my printer is set up to handle those exact parameters, how do I actually choose between them? Where does the decision tree split?
The split comes down to the UV factor. It's all about where the part will live. Think of choosing between them like buying a jacket.
Okay.
You wouldn't buy a heavy winter coat if you're just sitting inside your house, right?
Yeah.
You need to know the environment before you pick the plastic. You choose ASA when the part lives outdoors or in direct sunlight.
Like what kind of parts?
Think of a bracket holding a solar panel in a garden, a sensor housing on a building facade, or a custom phone mount sitting on your car dashboard right behind the windshield.
So ASA handles the sun better, but why? What is actually happening to ABS when you put it outside? I mean, I've seen people in the Thursday Q&A complaining that their outdoor ABS parts just crumbled after a year.
To understand that, we need to look at the chemistry. ABS stands for acrylonitrile butadiene styrene.
Quite a mouthful.
Yeah, but the butadiene part is a rubber compound. That rubber is what gives ABS its excellent impact resistance, acting like tiny shock absorbers inside the plastic.
Okay, that sounds like a good thing.
It is, but that specific rubber contains chemical double bonds that are highly sensitive to ultraviolet radiation. When UV light hits ABS, it literally snaps those chemical bonds.
So the sun is actively breaking down the molecular structure of the plastic?
Yes. The surface begins to chalk, it turns yellow, it becomes brittle, and eventually the mechanical integrity fails entirely.
And
ASA, on the other hand, replaces that vulnerable butadiene rubber with an acrylate rubber. Acrylate does not have those same fragile double bonds, so the UV radiation just passes over it without breaking the molecular chain. ASA was specifically developed to resist sunlight.
So on the flip side, you stick with ABS when the part stays tucked inside a device or an enclosure.
Exactly.
Like if it's an internal mechanical component in a dark server rack, ABS is generally cheaper and more readily available.
That's the trade-off. If the sun is not hitting the part, the UV stability of ASA drops completely out of the equation, making ABS the more economical choice for indoor functional parts.
But I see a lot of like intense debates online about their thermal properties. Some people in the forums swear that ABS handles heat better than ASA, while others claim they're identical.
What's fascinating here is how the conventional wisdom often gets muddy.
Yeah.
The data isn't perfectly conclusive on them being perfectly identical thermally across every single manufacturer's blend.
Mm-hmm.
However, ASA definitely offers excellent heat resistance alongside that UV stability, making it the undeniable outdoor winner.
Right.
Meanwhile, what we do know for certain is that if you use ABS in direct sun, it gradually degrades at the surface.
Right. And if the surface is chalking and crumbling because the chemical bonds are snapping, the internal heat resistance of the ABS doesn't even matter anymore.
Exactly.
The structural integrity is already gone. Okay, so that handles our standard enclosures and outdoor parts. But what if we need to move further up the decision tree?
Let's do it.
What about parts that need to endure extreme physical abuse? I'm talking about functional gears, joints, or bearing housings that face repeated bending and impacts.
When you introduce heavy kinetic stress and repeated friction, you enter the territory of nylon, which is also referred to as PA or polyamide.
Mm.
Nylon brings an exceptional level of toughness and wear resistance. It has a lower coefficient of friction, meaning parts slide against each other smoothly without grinding down. It can withstand repeated bending and flexing without fatiguing, which is why it's the absolute go-to material for things like functional gears.
And if we need the ultimate thermal champion, let's say I'm printing something for the inside of a hot car where even ABS would soften.
Then polycarbonate, or PC, sits right at the top.
Okay.
Polycarbonate handles extreme environments. It is highly rigid, it has incredible impact resistance, and it boasts a significantly higher glass transition temperature than ABS or ASA. It's the natural fit for serious load-bearing components in high-heat scenarios.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Reading through the failure stories in the Thursday article, both nylon and polycarbonate share this massive fatal flaw that catches so many intermediate makers entirely off guard.
Oh, the moisture trap.
Yes. They are both incredibly hygroscopic.
Hygroscopic meaning they actively pull moisture out of the ambient air. And it is the absolute deciding variable for both of these materials.
Right.
Nylon, in particular, absorbs airborne humidity faster than almost any other common filament.
But what does that actually mean at a chemical level? We always hear the phrase, it absorbs water. But how does ambient humidity destroy a solid plastic part?
It's a fascinating process. The water molecules are polar, and they actually wedge themselves between the polymer chains of the nylon.
Okay.
The water acts as a plasticizer. It forces the chains apart, making the raw filament feel very flexible and rubbery in your hands. But the disaster happens when that waterlogged filament hits a 260-degree nozzle.
Oh, because water boils at 100 degrees Celsius, so it's flash boiling inside the printer.
Exactly. The moisture turns violently into steam inside the hot end. As the plastic is extruded, those expanding steam bubbles create microscopic voids throughout the layer line.
So it's just full of holes.
Yes. You'll actually hear it popping and hissing as it prints. The final print will have a rough, foamy surface, and because it is full of tiny air pockets, it loses a massive amount of its stated mechanical strength.
So you cannot just tear open a fresh, vacuum-sealed spool from the factory and hit print.
You really can't. Even factory-sealed spools often contain latent moisture from the manufacturing process. Drying the filament in a dedicated heated dryer for several hours is a mandatory workflow step.
It's not an optional fix.
No, it's a fundamental prerequisite. If you try printing nylon or PC straight from an open package, it's a disaster. It cracks, foams, and loses strength.
Okay, but let me ask you this about polycarbonate. Does an at-home hobbyist really need pure polycarbonate? When you look at the specs, it requires a nozzle temperature of 260 to 300 degrees Celsius. That feels like absolute overkill.
With a fair assessment. Pure polycarbonate is notoriously demanding. It shrinks significantly as it cools, meaning if you do not have a perfectly dialed-in high-temperature heated chamber, severe warping and layer delamination are almost impossible to suppress.
Right, the internal stresses will literally pull the print apart.
Yes. So for most intermediate users, PC-ABS blends are a much more sensible middle ground.
How does a blend help? Does it just, like, split the difference?
Essentially, yes. A PC-ABS blend gives you a portion of that extreme high heat resistance and an impact strength from the polycarbonate, but it introduces the easier printability and lower shrinkage rate of the ABS.
That makes a lot of sense. Which brings us perfectly to the next major constraint we have to discuss, the printer hardware itself.
Yes. The equipment prerequisite is often the hardest physical limit you will face. your printer limits your choices. We mentioned earlier that enclosures are practically mandatory.
Right. The source article specifically calls out enclosed machines like the Bamboo Lab X1C or the QWERTY H2S as handling these engineering materials far more reliably.
Did you?
But why does a simple box around the printer make such a massive difference in the mechanical strength of the part?
It comes down to managing temperature differentials and thermal contraction. When the plastic is extruded at 260 degrees, it's expanded. As it cools down to room temperature, the material physically shrinks.
Okay, so if you try to print a large ABS part on an open bed printer in a drafty room,
the bottom layers are locked to a 100-degree heated bed, keeping them expanded. But the upper layers cool rapidly to the 20-degree room temperature.
So the top is shrinking while the bottom is staying the same size.
Exactly. That creates massive internal shear stress. The shrinking upper layers act like a rubber band, pulling the corners of the part up and away from the bed.
Oh, that explains another reader Q&A story about large functional parts peeling off the bed.
Yes, that's the physical cause. Enclosures trap the heat radiating off the bed, keeping the ambient air around the part at a stable, warm temperature. This slows down the cooling process and allows the entire part to shrink uniformly once the print is completely finished.
So the solutions for warping all revolve around managing that thermal gradient. Enclosed chamber, clean heated bed. And the Monday Hub article also mentions you can use a brim to increase the surface area contacting the bed.
Right.
But I love the design tip they included about the physical geometry.
You mean rounding the corners?
Yes. They suggest rounding off sharp corners in your CAD software. A sharp 90-degree angle concentrates all that thermal pulling stress into a single tiny point, which is why corners always lift first.
That's right.
If you round it into a curve, you distribute that stress over a wider area.
It's an elegant solution. Designed for the manufacturing process,
mm-hmm.
not just the final aesthetic.
Absolutely. Now, we've spent a lot of time talking about theory, physics, and how things break, but I want to look at what successful functional printing actually looks like in the wild.
Okay.
The Thursday support article highlighted a reader story that I thought was brilliant. It's about fixing the 3D printer hardware itself using these exact principles.
Oh, you're talking about the microSD card slot failure.
Yes. A very common failure point on cheap control boards is a broken microSD card slot.
It really is. Those tiny slots rely on microscopic metallic leaves to lock the card in place. After a few dozen insertions, the friction wears down the contacts, the springs lose their tension, and the board stops reading the card entirely.
Which effectively bricks the printer if you don't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. But the community fix here is a perfect example of functional engineering. Instead of trying to replace a fragile component on the motherboard, they bypass it entirely.
The user bought a simple micro SD to full-size SD extension adapter. It's basically a ribbon cable. You carefully plug the micro end into the failing slot, route the ribbon cable outside the machine, and then mount the full-size SD reader in a custom 3D printed housing.
And the sources mention a very specific hardware application of this fix.
They do. This is often mounted on a frame, specifically the acrylic frame of the Annette A8.
Right.
And I want to explicitly note a detail from the data here. While some older forum posts mistakenly call it an 8mm frame, the actual data shows the Annette A8 relies on an acrylic frame.
Good clarification.
Yeah, and the beauty of this printed holder is that it takes all the physical strain off the fragile motherboard slot and transfers it directly to that sturdy acrylic frame.
You use the 3D printer, selecting the right durable filament, to print a structural part that permanently fixes a mechanical flaw in the 3D printer itself. I love that.
It's very meta. It is. Okay, before we wrap up the theoretical side of this framework, we need to pause the conversation to deliver the actionable advice for the week.
The key tip.
Exactly. This week, sort your queued functional parts by where they will live. Send anything facing sunlight to ASA and keep interior enclosure parts on ABS, both at 240 to 260 degrees Celsius nozzle in an enclosed chamber.
It's such a great habit, just organizing your projects by environmental demand before you even slice them.
Right. For example, let's say you spend your weekend modeling a custom dashboard mount for your car, and you also design a new casing for your indoor printer motherboard.
What?
Don't just print them both in whatever is loaded. Put the dashboard mount in the ASA pile and the motherboard case in the ABS pile.
Let the specific chemistry of the material do the work it was designed for.
Exactly. That simple sorting habit will save you from having to reprint that dashboard mount when it inevitably chocks and crumbles from UV exposure.
It's about working smarter.
So what does this all mean when we put the whole decision framework together?
It means you must completely reverse your order of operations.
Okay.
You cannot start with the material and try to force it to work. You must define the service load first. Ask yourself, what ambient temperatures, what mechanical stress, and what UV exposure will this part actually face?
Right.
Second, you choose the filament chemistry and the layer orientation based on that specific load. And only at the very end do you tune your printer temperatures and cooling settings to accommodate that choice.
Form follows function, and the material follows the environment.
Precisely. But, you know, this raises an important question, something we haven't fully answered yet.
What's that?
Once you have gone through this entire process, once you've carefully chosen ASA for the UV resistance, dried your nylon to prevent steam voids, and printed it in a heated enclosure, how do you mathematically verify it will hold up before putting it into actual service?
Because you certainly do not want to find out your custom bracket fails while you're driving down the highway.
You don't. You need to start thinking about systematic at-home load testing and failure diagnostics.
Oh, like hanging measured weights off the brackets.
Exactly. Testing the sheer strength of your specific layer orientations, destructively testing your prints, and analyzing the structure of the cracks when they do fail, that is the next frontier for an intermediate maker.
Testing the absolute breaking point in your garage so you ensure you never actually reach it in the real world?
Yeah.
That is a brilliant challenge and a great place to leave it. Thank you for joining this deep dive into engineering filaments. Hopefully the next time you pull a complex mechanical bracket off the build plate, it handles the physical load exactly the way you engineered it to. For the full numbers, see printera3d.com.